Good morning, and welcome to the Westmoreland Coal Company first quarter 2017 earnings conference call. At this time, all telephone participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the prepared comments, instructions will be given for the question and answer session. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded today, and a replay will be available as soon as practical on the investor portion of the company's website. I will now turn the call over to Jennifer Almquist, Investor Relations.
Thanks, Doug. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining our call. On the call today are Kevin Paprzycki, our Chief Executive Officer, and Gary Cohn, our Chief Financial Officer. Before Kevin and Gary's prepared remarks and the question and answer session, please let me remind you that statements on this call regarding Westmoreland's expected future performance and conditions constitute forward-looking statements within the meaning of federal securities laws. These statements are subject to certain risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed in the forward-looking statements. For a discussion of such risks and uncertainties, please see our most recent Form 10-K as filed with the SEC. We expressly disclaim any obligation to update or revise publicly any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. Also, during today's call, we will refer to certain non-GAAP financial measures. Reconciliations of these non-GAAP financial measures to the most directly comparable GAAP measures are included in the press release we published this morning. For your reference, reconciliations of adjusted EBITDA for the restated historical 2015 and 2016 quarterly periods are also included in today's press release. In addition, we have posted an investor presentation on our website at westmoreland.com. With that, it is my pleasure to turn the call over to Kevin.
Thanks, Jen. Good morning, everyone. Before my remarks on the quarter and our strategy, I'd like to comment on our recent safety incident. We are incredibly saddened by the loss of one of our Westmoreland team members last week at the Colstrip mine. Our hearts go out to the individual's family, friends, coworkers, and all affected. We have been fully cooperating with MSHA from the moment they arrived at Colstrip, and we're doing our own review in order to understand what happened, why it happened, and ensure it never happens again. Given our culture here at Westmoreland, the loss of a team member is felt by everybody. I've reiterated to the Westmoreland team, especially those at Colstrip, to please take the time they need to be incredibly vigilant for their own safety and the safety of their teammates. This is a difficult time for us, but together, we will support each other and get through it. I'd also ask our entire team to be ready to again elevate Westmoreland's safety performance to the top tier where it's historically been. Turning to our first quarter results. Although the first quarter of 2017 was challenging, we factored most of the drivers into our full-year guidance, which we have reiterated today. The slow start was driven by several factors. Tough weather conditions impacted us significantly this quarter. Looking back, last year started out with mild weather. Weather-related demand picked up mid-year, allowing us to finish the year with two record-setting quarters. 2017 has started off even milder than last year. This mild weather drove low power demand and prices, which led to lower coal sales. This impacted our operations across the board, but was most evident within the WMLP Ohio markets. Weather also impacted WMLP's operations at the Kemmer mine, although it wasn't from the mild conditions. As the mine was routinely working through one of its more difficult parts of the mine plan, heavy snow, followed by even heavier rains, flooded the pit. This reduced our first quarter production and deliveries to our customers and increased Kemmer's costs. Also, on the operating side, we had to undergo unexpected repairs on two drag lines in Canada. The repairs were for items our team discovered in the normal course of business. These repairs reduced our coal sales and increased costs here as well. Overall, our operators did a tremendous job proactively addressing these challenges. They pivoted quickly with their mine plans, pulled back on operating expenses, adjusted schedules, and fully resolved our equipment issues. Their immediate actions enabled us to maximize results in light of these Q1 headwinds. Despite the Q1 challenges, we remain confident that we'll achieve our full-year guidance range for several reasons. First, our drag lines are now fully back in service. Second, the challenges we faced resulted in low Q1 ending inventories, both at the mine sites and at our customer sites. We are now starting to serve this pent-up demand. And lastly, we have moved through our more challenging mining areas and are well positioned to improve costs and yield over the rest of the year as we enter more optimal parts of our mine plans. Shifting gears to our long-term strategy, we've continued to make progress on all our key priorities that will unlock shareholder value. First, we have made good progress with respect to our non-core assets, Coal Valley and Rova. We have run a full-blown process for each asset and selected the highest and best offers. Although there can be no assurance that either transaction will close, we are optimistic that we'll have more to share with you in the coming months. Second, we have also run a robust process to select financial advisors and have selected two investment banks. With these advisors, we have begun working down multiple paths toward optimizing Westmoreland's capital structure and addressing WMLP's 2018 debt maturity. In closing, our margin-protected business model enables us to consistently generate positive EBITDA and cash flow in both good times and challenging times. Despite an unusual set of circumstances, this quarter's results demonstrate that our resilient model consistently produces cash flow. Our cost-protected contracts allow us to recoup our fixed costs even in times of low volumes. This positions us well to run for the long term. With that, I will now hand the call over to Gary.
Thank you, Kevin. Good morning, everybody. We delivered adjusted EBITDA of $88 million in the first quarter, including an accelerated $47 million from Capital Power's early loan lease payment. The incremental adjusted EBITDA from this payment, compared with Q1 of 2016, was $48 million. Adjusted EBITDA without this payment declined $23 million year over year. The decline was attributable to the expected contract runoffs, low Q1 weather-driven demand, poor operating conditions due to excessive rainfall, and dragline repairs. U.S. adjusted EBITDA declined 9% in the first quarter on 22% fewer coal tons sold. This reflects the Beulah and Jewett contract expirations, the benefit of the additional month of San Juan ownership, and high-margin reclamation work at Jewett. In Canada, first quarter adjusted EBITDA was up $36 million compared to the same quarter a year ago. The Capital Power payment benefited adjusted EBITDA by $48 million year over year. Without this, Canada's adjusted EBITDA was down $12 million driven by the dragline repairs and us temporarily mining in lower yield areas at other mines. The draglines are back in service, and we are mining in more productive normal areas. Turning to the MLP, adjusted EBITDA was down 33%, and tons sold were off by 15%. Ohio is one of the few areas of our business with open market exposure, and we continue to experience heavy pricing and volume pressure there. The MLP results also reflected lower sales and increased costs at Kemmer due to record-setting snowfall followed by heavy rains. Our 2017 outlook for the MLP has not changed meaningfully. Kemmer has dried out and resumed normal operations. We expect to recoup most of the lost Q1 adjusted EBITDA at Kemmer, as the tons we could not deliver will be delivered during the balance of the year. In other words, these sales were delayed, not lost. The MLP's outlook continues to reflect the ongoing softness in Ohio. The benefit of our model is the persistent cash flow we generate even in a down quarter. With our strong Q1 cash flow generation, we covered our cash interest expense, made our principal and capital lease payments, covered working capital investments, and acquired reserves. Considering this, we still increased our cash balance by $15 million to finish the quarter with $75 million on hand. If you look at the big picture, we generated free cash flow of $43 million. This includes cash uses of $32 million for interest, $11 million for reclamation, and a $3 million cash use for working capital. We expect working capital to be positive for the year, although it will swing quarter to quarter. Net debt totaled $1.1 billion at quarter end, of which $748 million is parent net debt and $304 million is WMLP net debt. The total net debt includes reductions of $15 million in debt principal and $7 million in capital lease obligations. Turning to the outlook for the year, we recognize that, as past years have demonstrated, our results will be lumpy quarter to quarter following weather patterns. Our second quarter tends to be the low point before we see the stronger back half. We have confidence in the resiliency of our margin-protected model, and we see a clear path to achieving our guidance again this year. We will, however, need a more favorable weather pattern, similar to last year's, to finish in the top half of our ranges. Our confidence is anchored in several factors. We have solved and put behind us the operational issues. Namely, we are back to mining in more favorable areas, and the drag lines are now fully operational. Further, the conditions have improved at Kemmer such that we are back to full, normal production. Again, the demand we could not meet in Q1 is being filled now. Westmoreland enjoys a differentiated, resilient, margin-protected model with an extremely attractive cash flow yield. We will continue to take the right steps with increased speed and urgency to capitalize on the opportunities to create more shareholder value. We look forward to updating you on our progress on all of our initiatives, including bringing Coal Valley and Rova to conclusions and on moving towards a simpler, stronger capital structure. Doug, with that, we are ready for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will be conducting a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, you may press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star key. Our first question comes from the line of Ashwin Reddy with Venor Capital. Please proceed with your question.
In my questions here. A couple. I guess the first one I wanted to start with was regarding kind of leverage and the MLP. And I thought, you know, on your presentation, you guys noted that the parent company is 3.3 times levered based on kind of the LTM EBITDA calculation given, which would obviously imply the MLP is much more levered. So, you know, as we think about the capital structure going forward, I was wondering if you can just kind of walk us through, you know, what other things could be done at the parent level to even further reduce that leverage amount, and then maybe secondarily to that, you know, how you kind of are thinking about dealing with the MLP maturity. To us, it seems like using any kind of equity, unless it's insanely accretive, wouldn't be the right move to do. But, you know, clearly that structure is extremely levered. So I'm just curious if you can kind of give us your thoughts on that, please.
Good morning, Ashwin. It's Gary. Thanks for the question. Clearly, the MLP has the most pressing, obviously, leverage as well as debt maturity coming up in 2018. I would say at the parent, we're comfortable with the leverage and with the maturities, and ultimately we'll continue to generate significant cash flow strong enough to meet the debt needs at the parent. At the MLP, I would say we're evaluating and we'll continue to address all options, working with the Finance Committee of the Board. And clearly our intent and the board's intent is to only do a transaction or follow a path that's accretive to the parent, or said the opposite way, not to do something that's dilutive at the parent. And as we develop the plan with our investment advisors and the finance committee, we'll share more details as appropriate.
Gotcha. Okay. And then, you know, when I think about the timing on, you know, the stuff that is regards to the parent, not necessarily with the MLP, because I recognize you guys obviously have more parties involved there to do something. How do you kind of view the timing on, you know, the timing on that? And I guess kind of flavors that I've been thinking about is, you know, potential equipment financing, which we've been talking about, maybe a global refi collapsing San Juan into the structure. Maybe you can kind of shed a little light on that too.
Yeah, what I would share with you, and I guess it's worth saying, although I know you guys know this, there's a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes that reflects our, you know, clearly the urgency with which we need to move and the speed with which we need to move on these initiatives. But obviously, there's a lot of work is happening behind the scenes. There's things we just can't share until we're ready. Specific to the equipment finance, we had been making pretty good progress with our equipment leasing partner there, and they unfortunately have had an event occur that's delayed that. So we're pursuing other alternatives. I'm still somewhat optimistic, but that's been delayed outside of our control, and we'll update you again as appropriate. On San Juan, I think it's clear that we're generating significant cash flow, and that's our least levered part of our business, but need to bring that into the parent so that we break that ring fence, and certainly that's our top priority there.
Gotcha. Okay. And then you guys had mentioned kind of, Coal Valley. I guess I was curious if you could give us maybe a little bit more color as to where we at. And maybe I'll ask the question this way. I mean, can you kind of just give us kind of what you think, you know, the liabilities that Coal Valley are? And I know potentially we've been talking about, you know, getting rid of those liabilities at a minimum, and at a minimum getting a contract mining deal, which, you know, in my mind, you know, you take 3-ish million tons or that number at Coal Valley and, 2 to 4 million or 2 to 4 bucks a ton, and, you know, that's kind of value from that portion of it, plus maybe whatever else you may be getting. But if you could kind of, you know, outline maybe what the liabilities are, that'd be great.
You know, Ashwin, there's somewhere upwards of $50 to $60 million total reclamation liabilities at Coal Valley. There's a little bit of bond collateral, I think, of the $20-some million that we'd also get back. And when you talk about, you know, shedding that liability and freeing up some of that bond collateral, that's clearly an event that would accelerate the delevering at the parent, like the other things you mentioned. But, you know, we ran a very robust process for Coal Valley. We did the same for Rova as well here, you know, during the quarter. We're in active discussions with potential buyers. Pretty optimistic in terms of the closing phase, and we've now shifted to where we're in documentation. Accepted the highest offer that came out of both processes, but it's, you know, put it this way, I'm as optimistic as I can be right now that we're gonna get some sort of value creating transaction out of these, but it's just premature, I think, to speculate on timing. You know, with respect to Coal Valley, we'd love to work on a contract mining arrangement for that if we found a buyer who would be interested in having us run it for them. And it's probably, again, premature to talk about margins per ton, but I don't think what you've outlined there is basically the contract mining fee somewhere between, you know, high one and $4 a ton that we typically get on those type of arrangements. So I don't think you're out of line, but I think it's probably a little premature for us, and hopefully we get through the closing phase and can share more details soon.
Okay, and then, you know, just one more on Canada. I guess, you know, can you kind of talk a little bit about just the rest of the contracts you guys have there? And, you know, I just want to make sure that we feel pretty good about the contractual protections that exist within the remaining Canadian business. And, you know, as you kind of see that going forward, you know, how we should kind of think about the risk profile of, you know, at least getting all the present value of those cash flows that we kind of expect to get.
Yeah, great question, Ashwin. You know, if you look at our Canadian EBITDA as a whole, I think it's important to keep in mind that, you know, 60 to 70% of that EBITDA is in Saskatchewan. You know, those assets we feel are pretty well positioned. And then you've got the carbon capture project up there, which has been a huge, huge underpublicized success for SAS Power. They've been running 2 years straight capturing some 90% plus or minus of the carbon. So the EBITDA in Saskatchewan we feel very confident about. In terms of Alberta, you know, the Genesee contract we've de-risked highly because of the Cap Power payment that we just received. But I think that mine will run out into the 2030s at the very, very worst case. And I think there's upside when folks in Alberta figure out what everything they're doing is eventually going to cost their ratepayers up there. But I think the worst case scenario is, you know, we de-risk this with Capital Power. All of our contracts ensure that we're not going to have any stranded capital up there. And I think we're still pretty well positioned across all our contracts, both in Canada and the U.S. When you look at the highest ton and you look at the highest cash flow generators, that in discussions with our customers, we feel confidently those are going to run for the long term.
Okay, and then one more, if I may, and, you know, it's maybe more a comment, but I'll just throw it out there anyway. But, you know, when I look at this business and I just say, okay, if I look at the cash flows of San Juan plus the parent XDMLP and I kind of run that off and, you know, use any kind of reasonable discount rate, to me, I get a stock price that's, you know, well in excess of where this is kind of currently trading today. And that's kind of, you know, more of a runoff value, not thinking about any potential future growth opportunities you guys may pursue in the future. But I guess I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on kind of, you know, where you guys kind of fall out on something like that. And if you can get something done accretive at the MLP, then obviously that makes it better. But you know, any thoughts on that would be great.
Actually, this is Gary. I'll take the simple way out of answering that question and say we agree. I mean, it's margin protected, great visibility business with long-term contracts. So to your point, the base business relative to the parent and the San Juan debt doesn't present a problem. Clearly, we look at the MLP, you see that maturity at the end of 2018 in an entity that has a significantly higher leverage ratio than the parent, and that's, again, something that needs to be addressed that we're working on, caveated by our desire not to do anything dilutive at the parent and only accretive at the parent. So I would just, long answer to a question, but I would just simply say, yes, I agree.
All right, great. Thanks, guys. I'll hop back out with other guys get in.
Our next question comes from the line of Mark Levin from Seaport Global. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, hey, guys. Just following up on Ashwin's question there a second ago, and maybe not thinking out, you know, into the long, long, long term, but 2018, and I know it's way too early to be thinking about, you know, guidance. I get it, but just given kind of the way the stock is acting this morning, it almost, you know, gives you the sort of feeling when you look at the free cash flow yield that all of a sudden next year in 2018, there's some massive cliff. So when you think just preliminarily, and I'm not asking for specific numbers by any means, but just thinking very much from a top-down level, 2018 pluses and minuses versus 17 from an EBITDA and free cash flow perspective, how might one think about what 18 would look like? What are the pluses and what are the minuses versus 17?
Good morning, Mark. It's Gary. Thanks for the question. I'm going to start with a reminder that even though there's a step down, which I'll touch on here in a minute, that when you look at the maturities and the debt that sits at the parent, we have sufficient cash flow to meet that debt. I think that's misunderstood, so obviously we're going to spend some time getting people refocused on that. But when you think about 2018, there's obviously a step down in cap power. So you had the operating management contract piece of that business, about $2 to $3 million annually. That continues. We had, I'm going to call it between $8 and $12 million additional a year for the capital reimbursement piece. That's the part that we accelerated, so that $8 to $10 million piece goes away. We've talked about Kemmer, the potential for Naughton Unit 3 to go away. I would tell you that we're in discussions there, and as we are with all these pieces, and we'll see what happens. San Juan, we've talked about Units 1 and 4 going away, which is probably let's call it a $20 to $25 million step down. And we've talked about the potential of Colstrip 1 and 2 going away, but again, it's an area where we're in discussions. The positive, the offsetting piece is, obviously, we satisfied and removed the Coal Valley cash burn, and same could be, you know, same set for Rova, and the ability to get cash collateral back for Rova offset those items. Again, I'm just going to encapsulate the total answer, and even with those step downs, when you look at our debt, the maturity ladders, and the debt at the parent, sufficient cash flow to meet our obligations there.
Said differently, this is a big transition year, and I think 18 will probably solidify us at a solid cash flow level that's going to last for a long period of time.
Got it. Appreciate it. And then, and then when you think about Rova, maybe you know, following up on Ashwin's question related to Coal Valley, maybe you can give us some more color in terms of timing, expectation. You know, what are potential realistic outcomes? You know, as we try to think about that going forward.
You know, given the great work the team has done here, you know, as we came into Q4, you know, restructuring that contract and working so that we're providing our capacity payment through purchase contracts instead of actually keeping the plant at standby, you know, we took some, I think, $12 or $14 million of cash burn out of Rova, you know, from the 17 through, you know, end of 18 timeframe. So they've already done a good job. What we're left with is, you know, a physical asset that has some value back in the PJM market. And that asset, you know, could have potential value on as a coal burner. It is one of the more modern coal-fired plants, but it also has value just based on its location and potentially using other sources, including gas. So, you know, I think, again, on both processes, we're pleased at the progress we've made, narrowing it down to a specific path on each. And, you know, but that said, sometimes these contracts, you know, take a while to get across the finish line. And we've seen that happen in, you know, over the past 5 years, certainly. But we're pretty optimistic that we're going to, you know, close on both these transactions here sometime in 2017.
Great. And one last question, Kevin and Gary. Is there, you know, as you know, as we sit here, I think we're in May, so we're almost halfway through the year. Is your, when you look at the bottom end of your free cash flow guidance, is there anything out there, anything that could happen, you know, within the realm of reason that would drive you below the bottom end 5 months in? Is there anything that could happen that would do that?
You know, Mark, we've talked historically about our model and its dependency on two things. You know, and the first is weather. So, boy, if this were an incredibly mild summer to fall, that would push us down there. And then you always have the risk of unexpected outages, and that's both on the customer side and our side. So we don't see either of those things happening, but I still think we're going to come in, you know, pretty solidly within our guidance range. But you know, we're pretty well insulated from all the swings that the other coal companies have, and I think that's the strength of our model. But are we immune to weather? Are we immune to outages? Certainly not.
Great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Our next question comes from the line of Jeff Kalicka from Mangrove Partners. Please proceed with your question.
August on for Jeff. I'm just trying to make sure that I understand the bridge to EBITDA next year. So I think the first thing we obviously need to do is remove the $47 million capital power gain. And then if we look at the sort of two known and two potential other reductions, could we be down below $200 million next year on a bridge basis?
Yeah, I mean, August, good morning, it's Gary. When we talked at the Q4 call, we got ahead of giving 2018 guidance, tough to provide too much color, but we talked about, you know, around $200 million. You know, we'll obviously be putting a much sharper pencil to that as we go through this year and sharing guidance with you, you know, later. But, you know, think in terms of 200 as a baseline.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, it is star one to ask a question. Our next question comes from the line of Lucas Pipes from FBR. Please proceed with your question.
I wanted to ask a question on the cap power repayment or repayment. Would you mind to share kind of how it flows? I assume it was not included in Canadian segment revenues, but I would appreciate some perspective on that. Thank you.
Good morning, Lucas. It actually is. So if you look at the adjusted EBITDA table, and I'll just reset the math a little bit, we collected $52 million in Q1, 5-2. About $2 million of that flows through what I'm going to call normal EBITDA. And then you'll see an adjusted EBITDA add back of $50 million in the reconciliation table in the earnings release. That is, all of that is included in the Canadian segment.
Got it. Okay. That's very helpful. I appreciate that. And I, so in terms of Canada, against my numbers, it looks like revenues were a little lighter than normal. Was that just a function of the rebuilds that you talked about, or anything else kind of out of the ordinary going on there during the quarter?
Yeah, we had two fairly significant dragline outages this quarter, and they impacted our ability to get tons out. And I think the guys did a good job resolving them, but it wasn't something we had in the plan. So I think you're seeing volumes down, you're seeing revenues down, and that was the big EBITDA driver. Other than that, I think there were some normal parts of the mine plan where we're working through some more challenging conditions, and our model allows us generally to recoup those costs over time. But the dragline outages were the biggest driver in terms of the lost volumes and cash flows out of Canada.
Got it. And then on Coal Valley, I've heard some rumblings that one way British Columbia may, I guess retaliate is the best word against U.S. lumber tariffs, is via a carbon tax on thermal coal exports. And I've heard that may include thermal coal exports from Alberta as well. Do you have any perspective on that? Would appreciate your thoughts.
It's still pretty early right now, and clearly you have one person up there in BC who's lobbying for a retaliatory tax or ban on export coal. I don't think there's a great deal of substance there. I don't think there's any type of drafting going on in terms of bills, and frankly, I don't think it's gotten a lot of support across the country up there. So, we're talking to our advisors. We're certainly keeping tabs. But the other thing I would add in there is that it seems to be directed more towards, because it's retaliatory, more towards the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that were to happen, there actually could be some upside being a Canadian coal exporter. There could be some upside for Westmoreland. So we'll see, but I think there's lots of gives and takes and a balance that's going to have to happen across the Canadian provinces up there. But it's all very early, and we're monitoring it closely.
All right. Well, appreciate your perspective, and good luck.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Michael Selschutz from BMO Capital Markets. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning. Just a quick question. I know the Q is not available yet. Can you give us any color around what kind of EBITDA was generated at San Juan in the first quarter?
The EBITDA Q will be out shortly. Top of my head, I don't have the San Juan EBITDA, but I remember it having a solid quarter. So we'll see that here when the Q comes out.
So they had a solid quarter, and again, I think it's worth mentioning to the credit of our operating team at San Juan, they've hit just about every metric they've laid out since we bought that mine, and it's just turned out to be an incredibly consistent operation, and hats off to those guys.
Definitely agree. All right. Anyway, good luck with closing the Rover and Coal Valley transactions. Look forward to hearing more about that soon. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
There are no further questions in queue. I'd like to hand the call back over to management for closing comments.
We'd like to thank everybody for participating today, and Gary and I will be around for questions the next few days, and look forward to talking to everybody. But again, I just reiterate, we feel we've got a very unique model, strong contracts, and then strong cash flows going out in the future. So we look forward to talking to you guys and answering any questions you may have. Thank you.